welcome to yet another Retro Review podcast here on the Barber's Chair Network. My name is Chris Novak, joined, of course, by Rob O'Neill and Chris Osborne. Today, we are going to be looking back in time to a memorable event that took place 20 years ago this week. That was the sale of WCW to the World Wrestling Federation, and thus the final episode of Monday Nitro, which, of course, was simulcast on TNT with the final episode of Monday Night. Well, not the final. Yeah. The final episode of Monday Night Raw before WrestleMania X7.
Yeah, which it's kind of crazy that, you know, it ended up being the go-home show for WrestleMania, which I didn't realize, I think, till a couple of years ago. But yeah, no, obviously a big day. Probably, I mean, one of the biggest days in the history of modern wrestling, kind of changed the business for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm excited to get into it, though. Chris, how you doing?
Oh, doing well. It was very interesting to watch. I have not watched that episode of WCW in forever.
Yeah, same here. I've watched that Raw before.
Yeah.
Because I've done some watch-throughs, but I never watched that Nitro. I haven't watched that Nitro since the first run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Yeah, and I watched it very oddly. Like, I tried to watch segment by segment and realized that that was probably stupid of me because they're on at different times. but yeah, I like both shows. And for what it was, it's very historic. And there's a lot of head scratching from the business end that I would love to get into.
Yeah. And I mean, we can just dive right in because we just have, I think, more notes than we've ever had before. So yeah, I think I'm going to go over, because there was Tony Schiavone talked about it. Bruce Pritchard talked about it. So we'll go over those first, and then we'll dive into the Observer starting in like January 2001. So we got a lot of stuff here. So Tony was basically talking about, you know, when he originally went back to WCW, he knew eventually Vince would win, which I thought was an interesting thing to say. Because I guess saying it in 1990, like, yeah, but, you know, believing that throughout is interesting because obviously they did have the upper hand for a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, especially when they were really kicking WWF's ass at the time and in that 83 weeks. I mean, that is a hell of a leap and a hell of a... I definitely agree. I thought if it was just Jim Crockett, they would have easily wiped the floor. But once Ted Turner took over and was really pumping money in, I would have thought that WCW could have lasted forever.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's interesting, too, because, you know, you talk about the quote-unquote war that we have right now. There's not going to be a winner or loser. They're just both going to exist pretty much forever. I mean, like, I don't think NXT or AEW will ever shut down for any reason. I don't know that Impact will ever shut down for any reason. I mean...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, with Impact is truly, like, the cockroach that won't die. I mean, they've been on their last life for seemingly... what, like 10 years, you know, almost 10 years now.
Yeah.
And they're still kicking. So yeah, I think in one form or the other, like, there's no way any of these companies today would probably end.
Yeah. And then something we'll get into a little bit, you know, Eric Bischoff wanted to buy the company. He put together a lot of plans for it. You know, they were going to shut down for a little bit and then relaunch with the big bang. And then Turner just kind of said they wanted to focus on comedy and sports, so they weren't going to air Nitro anymore, even if Bischoff bought it. So, you know, without a TV deal in place, Bischoff's investors were just not having it. You know, Tony got into how the AOL Time Warner people were the dumbest fucking people to ever walk the earth because they ended up selling a library for like $2 million, which, you know, you think of what they could have done in DVD sales.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
A multiple of that number they would have done just in like two DVDs. I mean, because it's not only, I mean, WCW, I'm assuming this though, but WCW's library is from the Mid-Atlantic, and I believe it would be Mid-South too, which would probably not have been shown on TV in, at that point, you know, 12 years. So yeah, that's a lot of wrestling that hasn't been seen and hasn't been shown to the world in an internet age that's just coming out, and where DVD sales are through the roof, or are going to be through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And like, you know, I think it does include all that because, you know, the original like WWE 24/7 run of, I think, late 2004 was when it finally launched. A lot of that stuff was on there right away. So yeah, I imagine that was all part of, and yeah, to get that for like $2 million. I mean, someone who wasn't Vince could have put up that kind of money and really turned a profit with it.
Well, and to me, that is one of the craziest things, because Bischoff's partners for this venture are the people who started and sold ESPN Classic. They were the ones who created the classic, like, getting old college football games and all that stuff from the teams. And then they sold that over to ESPN. Like, that seems just like right up their alley. I can't believe they just were like, oh, well, we can't start a wrestling promotion. We'll just leave the whole deal. Like, why would you not just get the library and just figure out what you can do with it from there?
Yeah. And that's interesting too, because like, yeah, you could have done, even if you weren't foreseeing like streaming becoming a big thing, you could have at the very least, you know, DVDs were starting to become more prevalent at this time. Like, you could have done something with it. So, yeah. And then, so Bischoff calls into the Nitro after Turner says that they don't want them anymore. So they're still trying to figure out a plan. And the next thing we hear, you know, Vince buys them. AOL was going to buy out the remaining contracts for basically pennies on the dollar, which I think we've talked about in the past is why none of the big fish really ended up in WWF, because they were just paid to sit home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Shane McMahon had a meeting before the last Nitro, said they were going to keep WCW around, but they're, you know, trying to figure out how. And, you know, Tony talked about how he didn't really want to be in wrestling anymore after this, and that's obviously true. He has the one shot in TNA where he cuts his promo on Mike Tenay, but other than that, he's not around until he goes to MLW.
Yeah, I listened to that What Happened When episode, and yeah, I mean, he was just so defeated and out of it at that point, and he definitely needed a break. He needed to get out of wrestling.
Well, plus he had the other gig lined up. He talked about that a little bit too, where he was working with Cox Radio, Cox Media, and then ended up doing Georgia football games for quite a number of years, I believe. So, yeah, and he wanted to go to WWE, but they never called him back. And then the network started, and he wanted to just be like a producer and be someone that collected the content, and they never called him back for that either.
So, it's crazy, crazy.
Like, that's a guy you could afford to have around just from a historian standpoint.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then, you know, just kind of getting into the Something to Wrestle, they hit a lot of the same points. It was actually interesting in the beginning because Bruce and Conrad were discussing something else. They're like, oh, we pissed off a lot of people in WWE. Bruce is probably never going to work there again, which is funny in hindsight.
Never say never.
And I didn't know that Jerry Jarrett tried to buy WCW, which wasn't something that Vince really was afraid of based on everything about Jerry Jarrett.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That'd have been interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, Bruce kind of goes into the story about when Vince bought the casino, because, you know, you're shocked by things and you learn not to be shocked. And that's kind of how it came up that they're buying WCW. And Vince had a meeting with kind of the upper brain trust to see if it was a good idea to buy WCW. And most of them said yes, but Paul Heyman said no, which, I mean, you can kind of draw your own conclusions about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Heyman clearly wanted them to do it for ECW instead.
Yeah, and ECW, though, it just didn't, for what eventually came, ECW had no, couldn't hold a candle to what the WCW library offered or anything like that. Because, I mean, it's not like they were getting the talons anyways, so just by a asset, you know, they weren't even on equal footing.
Yeah. And I mean, they pretty much got all the people from ECW that they wanted.
Yeah.
So, you know, then just a couple more things, you know, Flair didn't bring his gear to that last Nitro cause he was out of shape, but you know, everyone wanted him to wrestle. So they had it sent that day down there. And, another interesting point I think that Bruce made that I agree with, you know, it was a shame that the last Nitro wasn't in an arena because it really didn't have the environment.
Nope.
You know, just doing it on a beach. It was unique, but it's actually not even on the beach. It's in some shitty hotel.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah, what a way to end. Yeah.
So yeah, just kind of getting into the Observer now from January. Paul Heyman's in serious negotiations to sell either majority share or all of ECW. You know, obviously he doesn't stick around. He is with the WWF within 6 weeks after this.
Yeah, he's already working with them. I mean, he's Paul Heyman, right? Yeah, like he's already on creative. So,
well, yeah, because his on-screen debut is either right before, or right after No Way Out, because Lawler leaves. Mm-hmm. So that's how we end up with Jim Ross and Paul Heyman calling WrestleMania 17. For whatever it's worth, the latest timetable I was given as an announcement for when the sale goes through for WCW is in the next couple weeks. A lot of people thought the announcement was going to be made and the deal was done, but the deal's not done yet. But Eric Bischoff is planning to buy the company, and he's got plans for it. So that's where we're at in January. Also, I thought this was interesting. In 2000, WWF had 5 world title changes, ECW had 5, and WCW had 26. So,
wow.
Yeah. You know. And the next week, Dave said, the general belief is that the announcement of the WCW sale could come before you read this early next week, and if the papers haven't been signed already, they will be soon. You know, still speculating that Bischoff's going to buy it and Turner's going to keep it, even though they're kind of pivoting their focus a little bit in terms of television. But they can move it to Wednesday because there's never baseball or basketball on Wednesdays, which, hey, look at that. That stayed true for Turner.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
It did.
Yes.
Because the NBA is on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Mm-hmm. And then January 22nd, after nearly a full year of various rumors, negotiations, and near-finalized deals, the sale of WCW by Time Warner to Fusion Media was announced on January 11th. So Bischoff got his way. You know, he's running things now. We talked about earlier with the ESPN Classic guys. Those are his partners here. And like I said, they have big plans. He's done numerous interviews since the week since the purchase. Been vague on a lot of things, but he was able to give some information that they're going to emphasize making the wrestlers look more like stars and find and create new talent, basically, you know, which you hear about everyone. Mm-hmm. Addressing various rumors and stories that have come out, Hulk Hogan said on Bubba the Love Sponge that he's going to the new company for $3.5 to $4 million, which, I mean, you can't take that seriously when Hogan is saying things on that program. You know.
Like, how much, I wonder what his WCW contract was at the time. Like, if that was even, he probably gave himself a raise.
Oh, yeah.
Off that 3.5.
Yeah. But, I mean, WWF had no interest in him at this point, so he probably would have ended up there. You know,
he would have ended up at home waiting out that contract.
Well, that's true.
Because there's no way, like, no matter what, if Bischoff bought it, none of these guys were coming out for lower money.
Yeah. No, that's true. Like I said earlier, you know, Bischoff planned to shut down for a little bit and then relaunch and kind of make a home base somewhere on the West Coast and film there for a while.
I think that's so weird because you're just abandoning, like, your stronghold is in the South. And I would assume that production costs, that just any sort of cost in hotel or flights or anything like that, your cost is going to be so much lower still staying in like Florida or Georgia or just somewhere in that South area, that I just don't understand why you would start a new business that you're already in the red and just expanding your costs.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting, you know, they bring up LA, Vegas, and Orlando, and obviously they had history in Orlando. That probably would have been a good place to go. I mean, Vegas, they probably could have got the tourism traffic. LA would have been weird.
Vegas would have made sense if they're working with a casino and a casino is, like, you know, pretty much sponsoring them, taking away cost of venue and helping out with travel and hotel. I guess that would make more sense, but only if they're able to really get that down.
Yeah. And then Bischoff kind of went on to address an interpromotional pay-per-view with WWF and said that, you know, probably wouldn't happen, but never say never. They're going to spend a year rebuilding the company and go from there.
I'll say never. Never, never then, never now, I don't think either.
Yeah. So with the new ownership, WCW Sin had the chance to be a start of a new beginning. Everyone was nervous and could add a strong work rate. But what is WCW Sin known for?
Being horrible?
Well, good broken leg, right?
Also, yeah, Sid just snapping his leg. Just terrible. Yeah, so, you know, WCW Sin didn't really go as they thought. Also, their big surprise reveal was Road Warrior Animal, which that's never a situation you want to be in.
Yeah, not in 2001. Maybe if it was like 1991. And even then, I don't know if it would have passed as a big surprise.
Yeah. So we move on to January 29th. Been much talk regarding a potential shutdown and relaunch of WCW, and it appears likely to happen. Nothing confirmed at this time, but, you know, Bischoff was going to run this, probably starting at Super Brawl. Let's go from there. So he was all in on this shutdown and relaunch, and I guess that's what you got to do. I mean, if you're really going to change that much stuff, yeah.
Do you think, though, it's like, I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but, like, a relaunch, like, taking yourself off of TV for that amount of time, even if it's, like, 6 to 8 weeks, in a 2001 internet type situation, do you trust your audience to come back?
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a lot of, like, that's a lot of time, and I don't know. I just don't. It's, especially if you're on a network that didn't want you to be, like, doesn't really care about you. Like, I don't know how much advertising they would have gotten in this deal to prop them up.
Also, you know, if you shut down in the middle of March, you're giving the WWF basically, you know, their biggest time of the year kind of unopposed, which, you know, maybe you're not going to do good business at that time anyway. And then I guess, you know, to kick things back up in the summer, yeah, maybe, but it would be interesting to see how many of the TV audience came back.
Yeah, and I mean, you're giving WWF that free reign during that time, and also, you know, you're losing a bunch of wrestlers, because no matter what, even if they're keeping the big names, they're still going to lose somebody, so you're just going to allow them to go over there, and they can make an impact and just show up and, you know, maybe pop something.
Yeah. And then, according to Elizabeth Fusion, all WCW contracts were signable in the event of a sale, including Hogan, because they wouldn't have bought it if the top guys weren't part of the deal. So, for now, they had control over all these guys, at least. So, you know, that's good. Moving on to February. A few things need to be noted about the WCW sale. At this point, while it's been announced, it's not technically going through for another month or two. So, TBS is trying to control the company and run it as low budget as it can. You know, it'll be probably a summer before the look and product are close to where Bischoff wants it, but all they can do for now is just tread water. You know, that makes sense. Another note about ECW, they hadn't been sold yet, and they need a miracle to keep from closing down pretty much immediately, and this was February 12th, so, you know, do the math. They're only going to be around for a couple more weeks. WWF policy 2 weeks ago was to not sign any ECW talent and give Paul Heyman a chance to sell the company or make a television deal, but now WWF can kind of just take whoever they want, which we saw them do.
Yep, they took Justin Incredible, they took Rhino, they took Jerry Lynn.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, the general belief is that Hogan and Goldberg will be key parts of the angle when the company does the shutdown on pay-per-view and part of the relaunch. They will not be. And AJ Styles and Air Paris are expected to sign 3-year contracts with the new group after a hot tryout match. So, you know, good for AJ, man. February 19th, Eric Bischoff's proposed shutdown of WCW starting with Sunday's pay-per-view was nixed by Time Warner because of commitments already made to advertisers, which you would think you'd either check on that or not make commitments to advertisers.
Yeah, I think, yeah, going through the Nitro show too, I was like, why are some of these ads like why would they decide to keep going? But they must have such a big contractual obligation to do it. And I guess this Time Warner just doesn't want to hemorrhage any more money out of it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the big ads on Nitro are Slim Jim and, you know, 1-800-COLLECT, who I guess had good working relationships with them for that entire time, so I get it. But yeah, you know, Bischoff was going to run a big angle at Slamboree and cease operations until Nitro, but can't do it. So so now his plan was to kind of do something similar, just shut down at a later show, but That will ultimately not happen either. At press time, there's no change in the Heyman situation. WWF has an offer out to him, but he hasn't accepted it. He's holding out hope for someone to come forth with the money to save ECW.
He would still be waiting.
Yeah. To just... So now, February 26th, WCW changed plans again this week with Eric Bischoff deciding against a shutdown. Said he didn't want to present a stale product and allow the fans to get more apathetic by struggling along with no storylines and no stars until the relaunch in May. So kind of like we were just talking about where, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get a shutdown just from the standpoint of keeping people interested. I mean, I understand you don't want to have them put on a crappy product, but I mean, figure out a different way to relaunch. I don't know.
Yeah. So then we go into March. The uncertainty of the future of WCW became more apparent this week as all long-term plans changed one more time, stemming from record low ratings last week, as well as the near collapse of the company's sale. Backdrop of the sale, WCW Diffusion Media almost fell apart midweek when the latest expenses revealed a more severe downturn in business than the new owners were expecting, as well as the problems with the new ownership group from the TBS side. It appeared most of the problems have been solved to a degree, but there's still considerable frustration. So the deal is in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, isn't the due diligence on this deal is like, it takes forever.
Yeah, because I mean, like I said, it got announced, I think, January. Now here we are in March and they're still going over this stuff.
Yeah, those. I haven't read the Nitro book. Like, that's on my list. I have it. I just haven't opened it. But that has to be a fascinating, like, story of, like, the books of WCW.
Yeah.
The amount of millions that they lost the year before, like, I don't even know that's... I didn't even know that was possible.
Well, there's the... I think it's, like, an Angel Fires website by Chris Harrington with all the WCW contracts from, like, 1997 to 2000 that's still active.
Oh.
And that's very interesting to look through.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to look that. I'm gonna look through that because these contracts, like any details on like some of the bigger names like Hogan or Nash, like those numbers and stuff, like crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, you know, I was looking into the Nitro book too, but I couldn't find my Kindle, and it's $40 for the actual hard copy of the book. Which,
oh geez,
I mean, yeah, it's expensive. So,
oh, yeah.
Paul Heyman, starting with the WWF this week, is a television announcer, and probable signing of a long-term deal is not just about the inevitable folding of ECW. It's another decision that few people have talked about. If Heyman believed that TBS would always want a wrestling show, then he would be better served not going to WWF, as opposed to it being his only viable option. He could sit tight and be a guy on the sidelines who can make a difference, but obviously he'll head to the WWF and have an interesting career there.
As most people do in WWF.
Yeah. Manages to be a guy that, you know, Vince obviously likes enough to bring him back five different times. Yeah.
Yeah, likes him enough to bring him back so many times, put him in charge of a whole show. Like, yeah, it's weird. It's crazy.
Yeah. I wonder at this point, Heyman is talent only, right? Like, he's helping people with promos and stuff, but he's not like on the creative team at this point, like in 2021, right?
I would assume so. Like, he's got to be either, maybe he's part of like creative in like the general sense of like we have a big creative group, but yeah, he's got to be mostly just talent, I would think, at this point. Like, yeah. once he got let go from the Raw job, like, it's got to be talent only.
Which, I mean, that's probably best for him.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
March 19th. There are many questions and few answers as it regards the future of World Championship Wrestling. At press time, just like ECW 2 months ago, there's only 3 shows remaining on the schedule. You got Greed, and then Nitro the next night in Gainesville, and then the Spring Breakout Nitro in Panama City. Nothing is scheduled for April. No one knows what's going to air on Monday and Wednesday nights. They still have the pay-per-view planned for May 6th in Las Vegas for Bischoff to do his relaunch, but it's not looking good. everything's dependent on the deal between Time Warner and Fusion being finalized, at which point Bischoff will have a chance to finalize a game plan that has changed a half dozen times in as many weeks. It's not a dead deal, but, you know, it's not looking great at the moment.
it's digging the grave for the dead deal, though. Because, like, yeah, this is not a very good sign of anything going down. Like, I don't know. I haven't listened to Bischoff talk about, like, the deal. And, like, I would be fascinated by, like, a weekly breakdown of where he thought everything was going and where it actually went wrong. Because it's just fascinating how it's, you know, maybe we won't do a break, maybe we will. And then it's like, well, WCW doesn't want to put anything on the books. We don't want to do it past this date. It's just a lot of great back and forth.
Yeah. Then if the deal goes through, the belief is that Bischoff will do his long planned out angle to shut down the company. But those working closest with Bischoff are under the impression that there'll be a show on April 2nd. So I don't know how long the shutdown's going to happen, but I guess it's still coming back, even though I thought we agreed that it was a bad idea. You know. The belief is that they're going to run 9 shows a month, 8 television tapings and a pay-per-view. TV would all be taped instead of live on Monday, which, I mean, that's probably a good way to do it, at least if you're going to relaunch.
Well, what did you say, though? 8 television tapings?
Yeah, so that's still 2 shows.
Yeah, that's crazy. 2 shows? I mean, that's just a lot of taping. If you're going to tape, isn't the point of taping is to tape more shows so you don't have to do so much? Like, shouldn't you have like 4 tapings that tape 8 shows? Or
yeah, I don't know if Dave was confused there where it's just gonna be 8 shows, because having 8 different tapings just seems like when you can just knock sense. Out like, yeah, you can knock out 3 or 4 tapings at once. And
yeah, where are you saving money on that? Yeah, I hope that's like a typo or something,
because you're still flying everyone in every week tape
twice a week. Yeah, maybe you're doing them back to, you know, day Monday, Tuesday instead, but even so, yeah, you're gonna fly them, you're gonna do 8 different tapings.
Yeah. And then we get to March 26th, where Dave writes, "Nothing is forever." Gives a memo from Brad Siegel, who, you know, said that they were planning to keep things going, even though they didn't have a sale, they're just going on hiatus for a little bit. And then Dave writes, "Even to the end, they couldn't be completely honest with their own employees. There's no hiatus. And by the end of the day, TBS announced that it would no longer air wrestling on its stations after a 29-year run." So yeah, TBS is trying to pivot more to comedy and sports, which, you know, I get it, I guess. Like, you get people in charge that don't care about wrestling. And, you know, Ted Turner at this point is kind of not in the day-to-day stuff as much anymore. That clears the way for an expected purchase of what is left of the company, the name and trademarks owned by the company, and the videotape library by the WWF. Plus, however, they negotiate contracts with wrestlers, which is supposed to go down within 2 weeks. So, there are many things that become clear as WCW was spiraling downward over the past 2 years. It was going to be sold as AOL didn't want to keep losing money. And the new buyers, whoever they would be, are going to have a lot of trouble because the momentum was trending downward. You know, it would have been interesting, I guess, if Bischoff was able to go through with it, because, you know, how long would they have really lasted? You feel like inevitably, you know, every time Eric Bischoff's been in power somewhere, it's been good for a little bit, but it's ultimately, you know, failed.
Yeah.
So, you know, who's he going to bring in? What top guy is he really going to have? And, you know, I don't think, you know, Flair's going to go work with him. Flair didn't like him at this point. Yeah. Hogan probably still would have, but, you know, it felt like at some point it was inevitable that Hogan was going to end up back in the WWF. You know, Brett can't work anymore at this point. And I know he talked about making new stars, and, you know, you had Booker T and a guy like Scott Steiner's on the up and up at this point, but it's tough to see them lasting really more than another 2 or 3 years after this.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I mean, what are they going to do to prevent them from losing money? Because I mean, part of the deal to get the time slot is paying so much money for it. So you're sort of like paying for TV. I mean, ad revenue might get you somewhere, but they're paying a lot of money for that time slot, even back, yeah, especially back in like 2001, essentially. And then you're paying the guys on top of it. But yeah, I don't see anything in Eric Bischoff's history to me that shows he was about pushing the younger guys. I don't see where, if he gets Hogan or if he gets some of these big name people like Sting or anything, I don't see how, who he's going to push. Maybe he does push Booker T, but I also don't see anybody on the WCW roster at this time that's like a young guy that I'm willing to push much higher than what they're at.
I mean, the young guys you wanted to push, you know, left for the WWF a year ago in the Radicals.
Yeah. Or they're all cruiserweights who you've just degraded for, you know, on your TV program, you've pretty much told them they're not going to be as good as these big guys for the past, you know, 6 years. So,
well, yeah. I mean, you know, you have Billy Kidman who you could push, but he looked like a dork against Hogan for however long he did.
You have Rey Mysterio, who's without his mask now. So you lost a big merchandising play, which WWF was so smart to get approval to get him back under the mask and bring him back in.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, all these guys, I mean, Shane, like just going through when I watch Nitro, like the only other person, like Shane Helms looked great, but he looks very generic in there. But yeah, all these other guys, I mean, I wouldn't be putting Sean Stasiak, you know, putting him as the face of my company or trying to be the next up and comer.
Yeah. And I guess it's like, oh, you know, what if they get to someone like, well, actually by 2001, John Cena probably was signed already. So it's like, even if they, I think all of those 2002, you know, OVW guys were already in WWE. So
yeah. And I mean, and you mentioned him earlier, like AJ Styles was just signed. AJ Styles, though, in 2001, is not going to be the guy who he wasn't even in the early days of TNA.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another guy. Like, I don't see them pushing the cruiserweights. So if they're not pushing the cruiserweights, I don't see who they're going to put in there.
No. So then you're left with kind of the guys you had, but also not those main eventers who, I mean, because again, I don't know which of them are coming back. I don't know, you know, if Goldberg's coming back, I don't know, you know.
Goldberg's not coming back for the money is, if they are not paying these guys their full contract, why would you go and take anything less than the full contract when you could just sit at home and get it? Like, if you're offering me more than the contract, sure. But why should I get off my couch if you're not going to pay me at least that amount?
Well, yeah. And this is something that we talked about, I think, when we did Survivor Series. That's why the invasion kind of failed, too.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason to come to work if you're getting paid to. Well, there's no reason for a guy like Hogan or Goldberg. You know, someone like a lower guy who can take the payout and then still go work, sure. But, I mean, if you're making $2.5 million to just sit home, you don't need to take a payout that would be probably $1 million and then go work every week.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, I mean, the only people I think that really took it that were probably big money people were probably what, Booker T, if he was even a big money person. I don't know when his contract would have been signed to make that, but DDP probably would have been a big one that probably took a buyout to go into it. But that's a lot of betting on yourself for people that are already big stars that don't need to bet on themselves. They can just take it and they're already money. They don't need to take a lesser payout.
Yeah. Well, and I think they knew Booker was coming already because they had him beat Steiner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, man, it's like I said, it's interesting because, you know, I don't even know that they last as, especially, you know, TNA probably doesn't exist in the same format, but
that's a good point. Jeff Jarrett makes the jump. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Jarrett would probably make the jump to like sort of probably help Bischoff run it. If I would assume that they're on good relations, but I would assume Jeff Jarrett jumps for sure because he's definitely not going to get any offer from WWF and we see where his future is. So yeah, I mean, Jarrett definitely would have, but Jarrett and Conan, that's who you're starting with. Mm-hmm. That's who I'll give you that would have been okay with going.
Yeah. What the WWF will do if it purchases a company has not been decided. when it was negotiating last year, because, you know, Vince wanted to buy them in 2000, the plans were that they were going to run it on a separate entity on the Turner stations, kind of keep it going, and then do an invasion that way by fully fleshing it out, which would have been better. I mean,
yes.
There's also the chance that McMahon would pick and choose who he wants for a minor invasion angle, which would leave the majority of the wrestlers, announcers, and office personnel out of work. And that's the one that ends up happening.
Yes, it is.
Bischoff had planned that if the sale fell through, that his people would start their own company in some form, targeting many of the names that either won't work for McMahon or McMahon wouldn't want. But I think ultimately Eric's just done for a little bit at this point, because he doesn't do anything.
Nope.
Until he comes back to Raw.
Yeah.
Although not highly publicized, some of the decision regarding Turner programming was made even before the leadership change. Plans made more than 1 year ago to try and distinguish TNT and TBS to give the station specific personalities. So, you know, the writing was on the wall for them for quite some time. Beyond the scenes, Hulk Hogan sent feelers about returning to the WWF. For a new company wanting to start up, the key names, because it would mean something to television executives, are Hogan and Goldberg. And kind of like we talked about, I don't see either of those guys going there.
Nope.
No. So, no way.
And then Dave speculated that Vince would maybe try and get Hogan to show up at WrestleMania, which he obviously did not. Exactly how the contracts will be handled is unclear. For McMahon to pick up many of the deals themselves would upset the pay scale of his wrestlers because of larger guarantees and maximum number of dates per year, which is why they just let Time Warner handle all that. Some think the Turner decision to can wrestling was ill-timed, because it's well known that it doesn't take long for a strong wrestling product, if it can be rebuilt, to turn ratings around nowadays, as evidenced by the rise of the WWF from when it was nearly canceled to what it is now. Which is a good point. I mean, you can turn it around quickly. And, you know, a debate that's come up in the past couple of years is it's, you know, easy content, you know, 52 weeks a year, 3 hours a week or whatever, new programming, but... Mm-hmm. You know, wrestling's also in a different place now than it was 20 years ago. So
significantly so.
Yeah, and ratings themselves are in a very different place than where they were 20 years ago.
Well, very much so.
I mean, if you were telling me that the WCW Nitro rating, like if one of the shows was getting that, like if one of the Wednesday shows were getting that, I can't imagine how much money they'd be getting per week or on a yearly basis.
Seriously.
Well, yeah, and that's always been the funny part about the war is that, you know, Raw and Nitro were doing 5 or 6 million viewers each, and you know, NXT and AEW were doing 10% of that.
Yeah, they're doing 1.3 combined, you know.
So, then just a couple other notes. Eric Bischoff realized that WCW was in trouble in August 1998, and because the foundation and strategy of the company absolutely changed, said that the demise of WCW really falls on AOL and Time Warner. Which, yeah, I mean, you know, you get people who don't know about wrestling running wrestling. That's kind of an issue. His plan to buy out WCW following its closure, Bischoff changed his mind due to no television being available. There were talks between himself and Fox about bringing WCW there, but he let Vince have it for $2.5 million. Vince was the only person who actually cared about WCW at the time, and even that's not really true.
Yeah, no, I mean, Bischoff just had such a, he wanted something his way, and if he wasn't going to get the TV deal, then there was no point into it. I think that's a flawed way to look at the what he could have bought. But yeah, I mean, he cared, and I'm sure there was other people that would have loved to have bought it and paid, you know, ran it, but that wasn't really what anybody, Time Warner, wanted. So
yeah. All right, let's get into Nitro. March 26, 2001 from Panama City. And we open with Vince and the Raw logo behind him. Said it was just a matter of time before he bought out his competition. He owns WCW now. There's a final broadcast of Nitro on TNT. He has the opportunity to address the fans and superstars, and the very fate of WCW is in Vince's hands. So they open the show with pretty much all of the pyro they have left in the entire company.
Yeah, that's what I said, man. I said the pyro budget sure wasn't low on this show, at least.
It seriously feels like they were like, oh, get all the pyro we have, and
boom, 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 boom.
At least they were outdoor, too, though, so maybe that helped.
That definitely did help.
Yeah.
Oh, if we know anything about Nitro, they always had pyro. Yeah,
that's true.
They had pyro starting off every hour, even when we had wrestlers in the ring.
Sure. It's
really ill-advised when you think about it, but they had that when they were hour number two, and they would be, there'd be like, you know, Jericho wrestling Booker T in the ring, and they would still have the fire coming off the turnbuckle post or whatever.
God. Remember when AEW had their big rally in the parking lot of the stadium, yes, and their big thing was we're going to have pyro?
Then WWE brought pyro back and it was cool, and now everyone has pyro and it's stupid.
Yeah, they could just not have pyro anymore.
And everyone has a VR graphic now also, and it's like, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
It's like, just save that for your big shows, not every week.
Tony Schiavone and Scott Hudson are hosts. Tony is very upset throughout this.
Oh, evening. Yeah, he's very upset.
Really, you know, he's trying to be professional, but at some points it does bleed out a little bit that he's just pissed right now.
I think he said, though, if I remember right, that he was working. Like, he thought everything that was being shown and everything that was, like, he considered everything a work at this point.
That makes sense. Yeah,
like he took anything that Vince said or anything that was coming on, that actually happened during the shows or anything, was all at work.
Yeah,
what he said. So,
so get Ric Flair out first, and he cuts what starts to be a good promo, but kind of goes all over the place. But
well, that's Rick, you know, that's Ric for you.
says that someone told him not to think about it being the last time he'll ever be on Turner. Has been fortunate to have the career that he's had. Talks about Luger and Steiner and the Road Warriors and the Four Horsemen. Said they all ran neck and neck with Vince for years. It's never been about the boys. WCW versus WWF only existed in the office. It's not really true. But
no, not really.
Vince can't hold the boys in his hands. You can't hold people's lives in your hands. If WCW's going out tonight, they're going on a high note, and Flair wants Sting tonight. So that's our main event.
It is.
We got a Randy Savage Slim Jim ad, which I thought was nice, even though he was not on television for about a year at this point.
Yeah.
And then we open the evening with Scott Steiner against Booker T, U.S. title versus World Heavyweight title unification match. Steiner tried to hit Booker with a pipe early on, and Booker moved out of the way. And then he eventually gets the win with the bookend to win the WCW world title. So good for Booker.
Yeah, it was an okay match.
Yeah,
it was just okay.
I mean, none of the matches on this show are good.
No, definitely not.
I'll take the Helms match. I think that was good.
Yeah, that was fine.
That was good.
For 4 minutes, it was great.
Vince is on the phone with an attorney because every time they cut to him, he's on the phone. makes fun of WCW for running their final show at a redneck beer joint in the panhandle of Florida. Man, you're in Cleveland. Like, you're running your big go-home show in Cleveland.
You're a pre-LeBron Cleveland, too.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Like, come on.
The Browns are only like a year or two in. Who are they about to draft?
Oh, God.
Probably.
2001. Who are the Browns about to draft?
Probably someone bad.
Thank you, Captain Obvious, on that one.
Gerard Warren.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was even worse than I thought.
Gerard Warren, who was sandwiched between...
Yeah, look at the next seven picks.
No, hold on. Look at the whole top 10. Honestly, besides Jamal Reynolds, unfortunately.
The Bears pick, too. Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know if David Terrell should be getting too much praise. But
you have Vic, you have Leonard Davis, Justin Smith, LaDainian Tomlinson, Richard Seymour, Andre Carter, Corn Robinson, and then even Dan Morgan at 11, and Marcus Stroud at 13.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way to go, Browns. You had Courtney Brown, Tim Couch, and Gerard Warren.
Casey Hampton was in that round, too.
Yeah. Steve Hutchinson was in that round. Santana Moss.
Oh, Drew Brees.
Nate Clemens.
Oh, yeah.
The Brees draft.
Yeah. Michael Bennett.
Reggie Wayne at the end of the round, too.
Yep. Todd Heap.
Wow. That's an impressive.
Algie Crumpler, Kyle Vandenbosch, Chad Johnson, just Kendrell Bell.
Really impressive draft to mess up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's when the Bears went David Terrell, Anthony Thomas in the first two rounds.
Oh, love it.
Go Blue.
Probably should have also taken Tom Brady. I know it was the year before.
It was the year before, yes.
Still, you could have.
All right. I'm sure they'll make up for it this year and give Andy Dalton all those weapons he needs.
Anyway.
It's all right. You're a Bengals fan now, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, apparently so.
Joe Burrow,
good
man.
Luck.
Joe Burrow. Hopefully they can stand upright this year.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Draft Penei. Penei Sewell. Yeah, there we go.
We get.
I should know how to pronounce that. I'm stupid.
You would think. Billy Kidman, Rey Mysterio, who does not have his mask on, against three count against the Young Dragons. The winner gets a Cruiserweight tag title match tonight.
I think the thing that stood out to me the most when I watched this was the fact that Billy Kidman just ate shit on his Shooting Star Press. He ends up outside.
I mean,
he straight up just ate shit. He got up there, he's bouncing himself on the rope. He jumps up, he hits it pretty well, but then he just eats shit. His face just hits the mat, and I'm like, my God.
Well, Billy Kidman doesn't know how to do a Shooting Star Press. This is something that we've discussed at length. But yeah, Ray and Kidman get the victory. So they'll have a Cruiserweight tag title match later.
Yeah, this is so sloppy. It's like so terrible. Why are we doing this?
Vince is on the phone again, and Trish comes in to celebrate with him, and then they make out.
That's pretty gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole Vince and Trish stuff, like, it wasn't good then, and it ages so bad in 2021.
Horrible.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, it's got a good payoff at WrestleMania, so that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, Trish with her sparkly-ass boots.
And she offered to live.
She did. I saw that the other day. That was cool. Chavo Guerrero Jr. against Shane Helms, which I believe they're going to run this back in 2006 or 2007 when Shane Helms on the long Cruiserweight title run.
Yep.
Yeah, this was a good match. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. I like three count. Three count's cool.
Oh, yeah.
You were the person. No. No, I like it. Shane Helms, he's innovative. He's like Canyon in that type, like with his offense and what he does and creates.
Yeah.
I loved the exchange at the end and him being able to reverse into the vertebraker, which if I was ever a wrestler, that would be number one move I would never take in my life.
No.
Oh, yeah. Agree.
Yeah.
It's cool to watch, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's amazing to watch. I'll watch it all day. I'm never taking it, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So move on. Booker says it's the end of a chapter. There's many more pages left in this book, which, yeah, he'll go to WWE for parts of the next 10 years.
Yes.
With stops elsewhere.
Chet Lemon.
Pay stops elsewhere.
Mike Awesome and Lance Storm are in action against Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare for the WCW Tag Team Championship. And you're going to talk about four guys who are pretty good that the WWE just had no interest in using. It's easier.
Well,
they tried with Palumbo at least.
Yeah.
Palumbo had multiple like gimmicks. Didn't he have Piper with him at one point too?
That was Sean O'Hare.
That was Sean O'Hare.
Oh, it's O'Hare. Okay, well, O'Hare then, not Palumbo.
O'Hare had the Devil's Advocate gimmick that was really coming on strong. But
and then they put him with Piper.
Yeah.
Palumbo, they did Billy and Chuck, and then they put him
He had the biker gimmick, too.
Yeah.
The biker gimmick, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That, too. So, Lance Storm has them play the Canadian National Anthem before the match. Meanwhile, back in Cleveland, Michael Cole interrupts Vince and Trish for an interview and says that WCW wrestlers and fans are concerned about the future. Vince asked Michael Cole how he feels about his future. Michael Cole in the WrestleMania baseball jersey and jeans.
Yeah.
Just a look.
Was it tucked in? I didn't even check.
Yeah, it was.
It was. Yeah.
You know. O'Hare and Palumbo retained, so they are your final WCW tag team champions.
Yep.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
We get a match between Sean Stasiak and Bam Bam Bigelow. Which is just wild to hear.
Yes. I mean,
yeah.
I guess if Bam Bam won, Stacy or Sean were going to have to get a tattoo. I believe that was the gist of this here.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's why I brought the tattoo kit with.
You know, good on you for trying to run an angle in your final hour of being a television program. Stasiak gets the win with Stacy's help. And, Sean Stasiak will go on to be Brock Lesnar's first feud in the WWF.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun. And now he's a chiropractor and kind of a weird guy.
So I'm not surprised at that last part, at least.
Yeah. Now William Regal's talking to Vince, says that he used to work for WCW, and, you know, buying them might not be worth it. He would hate for Vince to ruin his legacy with their stench. And that was good. I like that. That's a good touch. We get a really good video package showing all of the NWA WCW champions. That was good, too. Big fan of that. Elix Skipper and Kid Romeo against Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman for the WCW Cruiserweight Tag Titles. Billy Kidman gets the win with an unprettier. And they win the tag titles. So, you know, good way to end it. I imagine the Cruiserweight Tag Titles were fairly new.
Yeah, like they were.
I don't think they had just had a tournament for.
Yeah. Well, you know. Sting tells us the only thing for sure is that nothing is for sure, and it's showtime. And then we get Ric Flair against Sting. And Rick is wrestling in a shirt because
he's fat.
Yeah, not in great shape. Someone in the crowd has a Jeff Jarrett foam guitar. If you know where to find something like this, please contact me.
Just at Matt Cardona, and he will probably has a couple of those.
Yeah. You know, Sting eventually makes Flair tap and then helps him up and hugs him. And you know what? If you're going to end your company somehow, that's the way to do it. You know, Tony and Scott Hudson get a little emotional. And then before we can soak in the moment too long, we cut to Raw. You know, yeah. God, Vince talked forever.
He did.
He did.
Said that he bought WCW because Time Warner can't sell it to anyone else. They're begging him to buy it. He said he'll sign the contract this Sunday at WrestleMania, but only if Ted Turner walks down the aisle and delivers it to him. Said that he did all this on his own. The only way that to beat a billionaire is to become one himself. Keeps talking about Ted Turner coming and begging Vince to sign the contract. But first, Ted has to watch what he's going to do to his very own son. He's going to grab him by the throat and squeeze the life out of him like he's going to do to Shane at WrestleMania. What should Vince do with WCW? He can put it on the shelf, or he can sit and watch videos of Hogan doing his ridiculous pose. Watch him talk about how they're going to bury the WWF, but he who laughs last laughs best. If they don't put it on the shelf, they could turn it into another big media conglomerate like WWF has become. But who's going to be part of it? And the fans start a Goldberg chant. Hogan gets boos. Lex Luger gets boos. Buff Bagwell gets a mixed reaction, which was interesting because Buff Bagwell sucks.
Well, high-pitched screams should tell you everything.
That's true. Speaking of Buff Bagwell and Lex Luger, they, like, once they heard the company was going under, considered walking out and basically did walk out, but then realized their contracts wouldn't be honored if they walked out, so they came back.
I wonder, like, Buff, because Buff ends up going, I wonder, I'm surprised by that.
Yeah. Booker T gets a pop. Scott Steiner gets a pop. Another Goldberg chant breaks out.
Steiner got a huge pop.
Yeah, he did, which it will not go well once it eventually happens.
Steiner got a huge pop in Ohio, which is to say, I don't know how many times a Michigan guy has been in Ohio.
That's true. Vince asks about Sting, who also gets a pop. Gonna be waiting a while for that one. Goldberg gets a huge pop. Vince would love to fly down to Panama City tonight and give everyone a piece of his mind, but he's going to wait because WCW is buried for now. And they start the asshole chant. Shane's music hits, which is the same as Vince's music, but...
Yeah, I totally forgot Shane didn't have his own theme at this point.
It's very confusing.
Yeah. He didn't have his own theme for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
not until 03.
Yeah, when he comes back in 2003, he has the theme, but yeah. It's... Shane's not in Cleveland, though. He's in Panama City. What's he doing in Panama City? Well, Vince's ego got the best of him. Said that he waited till Mania to finalize the deal and have Ted Turner come finalize it, but that was the opportunity Shane was looking for because the deal is done. And the name says McMahon, but it says Shane McMahon. So Shane McMahon owns WCW now. And that is the end of Nitro. I know you guys watch Raw. I don't think there's too much
related
to this that we didn't cover, except the Jeff Jarrett thing where he gets fired on television, exactly. Which is obviously iconic in its own right and will eventually smooth itself over 20 years later. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting watch because... You know, everyone's still kind of doing what they can, even though they're going out. You know, it's the Vince is kind of over the top about being an asshole. I don't think you need to lay it on that thick, but I get it.
Yeah. That's all character. It's all story. Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, it's interesting to kind of balance this and the WrestleMania build at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I will say the watching the Raw with it, Raw actually did a really good job at really mentioning the or doing its part to really play up WrestleMania. Like, it did feel like WrestleMania, at least I think every match on the Mania card got hit, had its own little time to shine, and actually like sort of had a moment to grow for it. So I thought they did a good job considering how monumental it was that Vince was buying WCW and that they were doing the simulcast, that the Mania stuff was not lost.
No, and if I had to guess, I would think that they probably, on SmackDown, were able to really hammer home the final Mania points as well.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, most of the Mania stuff was already done because they had already done the sit down with Rock and Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's already done. You had the big Triple H leaving Undertaker bloody the week before. Shane and Vince, like the whole big thing with WCW played into that. So I think the only other stuff I think was like Foley. They had a Foley segment where Foley, you know, somehow knew that he was going to get fired by Vince. So yeah, they had a revisionist history of like, he got a paper signed by Linda before she went into her little catatonic state. And he's now special referee for the Shane and Vince match and everything.
Hey man, that's good foresight. It's like Stone Cold's contract saying that he's exempt from all drafts.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, that this thing that couldn't have happened, you know, but you know, never happened before. But yeah, they did a very good job at least.
Yeah, and we do have a brief epilogue here from April 2nd in the Observer. The purchase of WCW by WWF this past week, combined with the ending of all wrestling programming on the Turner Networks, changes the entire landscape of the pro wrestling industry forever. Which, yeah, I mean, that is correct. Mm-hmm. A 10-day period, momentous, that'll end with the biggest or second biggest money show in the history of the industry and the biggest dream match in American wrestling since Hogan and Andre. It isn't important in the sale, but the reality of where wrestling stands with the American television community, and that affects the industry's future far more, is that the television industry's negative perception of pro wrestling and Vince buying WCW looks to be a single ownership monopoly of a major league industry in this country for the first time in its history. Yeah, so Dave is real concerned around this point that wrestling's just going to not exist anymore. yeah, I mean, it's fine, man. Just let it be.
Yeah, I mean, you can't make TV executives want something, you know.
Yeah,
if that's the case.
And then just one final note here, and I wanted to end on this. The last Nitro in Panama City, Florida was apropos on many levels. The crowd was about 1,000 because of a screw-up. The original plan was to make it a free show, but a week before the event, they decided it'd be better to sell tickets. Then when nobody bought tickets, they had a sad crowd. Until the end, they were WCW.
Yep.
That's
cool. Oh, man. Well, that's that then.
That'll do it.
I'm glad we did this one. This was a lot of fun.
This was.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, are there really any other thoughts about, it's crazy that it's been 20 years since
it happened. Yeah, it's definitely crazy that it's been 20 years.
It was like right before I started watching, but mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy.
Yes. I don't envy anybody that was like near Vince, like in the food chain, because Vince's, you had Mania, you had the sale of WCW, and you still have the XFL going on. And that was the thing that surprised me, because in the middle of Raw, you got Tommy Maddox highlights. And I was like, oh my gosh, the XFL is still going on right now.
Yeah, I didn't include it because we would have been here all night. But the Bob Costas interview was like 3 weeks before all this as well.
Oh,
which is obviously a great moment in history. yeah, there's so much going on. And you really don't realize it's all going on at the same time until you really sit down and take a look at it. But yeah, it's a fascinating time. It's something that we're never really going to see again, because kind of like we talked about earlier, I don't think, you know, AEW is ever going to get big enough where it's a competitive thing week in and week out, just because of how everything has changed so much. So there's never going to be another, you know, war like this, I don't think. And that's probably for the best, but at the same time, you know, it's good to have competition.
Yeah. It's good to have competition, but more importantly, it's good to have places where people can go to work.
Well, yeah.
So I think that's always the best thing for them.
Yeah, and that's been the big thing, I think, since the launch of AEW, too, and since it got big and got guys like, you know, Rusev and Christian to go over there, where, you know, that wasn't going to happen with TNA or Ring of Honor. Well, I mean, it happened with TNA for a little bit, but it wasn't going to happen with present-day TNA or Ring of Honor. So just having that level of competition is good, even if it doesn't get to, you know, the level that it got to in the 90s, which it won't.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think, yeah, wrestling will probably never be as popular as it was in the 90s or in the 80s.
No,
but yeah, I mean, it'll always be there. So
yeah. All right. Yeah. I don't know what we're doing for April yet.
No
WrestleManias.
No,
so we'll have to look what else there is, but yeah. You want to take us out?
Yeah. So, you can follow me, of course, at Chris M. Novak. You can follow Chris Osborne at Hitman99. Follow Rob at Robert O'Neill 31. You can follow the Barbershare Network at BarbershareNet. You know, subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/BarbershareNet. You can listen to all the podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud, and you know the deal from there. So we will be back with a new Ruthless Aggression coming at you this weekend, and some more Retro Review podcasts in April. When we decide them, you will know. And that's it. Have a great night.